How would you like it if your faults and failures and also your mountaintop experiences were all recorded in a book? Well, I know none of us would like that, at least most of us, because let's face it, what we do is, and it's our human nature, is to try to present the best self that we can. And then when that doesn't work, we add stuff that's not true to who we are. That's how we are, right? The Bible, what I love about it is that it brings to life characters, all different kinds of characters that we have grown to, some of us more than others. Some of us more than others. Thank you. Have come to really appreciate some of them. How many of you have been in a situation where, because of that situation, who came to rescue? Joseph. Joseph became a real good friend of yours. And you were able to identify with some of the things that Joseph went through. Maybe some of you have been on a journey and waiting for God to fulfill a promise, and you could relate to Abraham. Or you fill in the blank. The Bible is filled with characters, and I love that. Because when I read the Bible and I see that some of them are just like me, they're prone to fail. They get discouraged. They don't live this perfect life that, for some reason, before I really got to know Christ and read the scriptures, I thought you had to have if you were going to be a follower of Christ. No, they were not men that walked on clouds. They were men that walked on the earth, and they hurt, and they had their struggles, and they knew what it was like to fail. And I can relate with that. So tonight we're going to look at a few characters. And primarily we're going to be looking at a couple, a new couple we're going to be getting introduced to. And it's Isaac and Rebecca. Isaac and Rebecca. But there's some other stuff before we get to them. We're going to look at a genealogy of Ishmael, who was one of Abraham's sons. And this guy was a real character. And what we could see is from his life is how not to live. How not to live. This guy really had no regard for the God of his father. And he was pretty wild of a character. And so we learned quite a few things. But tonight we find ourselves in Genesis chapter 25. We're going to learn a few things from Ishmael. We're going to learn some things from Abraham and Sarah, or be reminded of things that we have already learned or have heard. And then we'll get to Isaac and Rebecca. But I draw your attention to Genesis chapter 25. We are looking at verses 12 through 18. And together, let's read. Now this is the genealogy of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar, the Egyptian, Sarah's maidservant, bore to Abraham. And these were the names of the sons of Ishmael, by their names according to their generations. The firstborn of Ishmael was Nebajoth, then Kedar, then Adbeel, then Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Massa, Hadar, Tema, Jeter, Naphish, and Kedema. These were the sons of Ishmael, and these were their names by their towns and their settlements, 12 princes according to their nations. These were the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years, and he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people. They dwelt from Havilah as far as Shur, which is east of Egypt, as you go towards Assyria. He died in the presence of his brethren. Now, if you remember, Ishmael is and was a result of Sarah trying to work out God's will, man's way. Abraham and Sarah could have waited on the Lord to fulfill God's promise and God's plans for their lives, but impatience got in the way. You remember that Abraham received a promise from God that he would be the father of many nations. His wife Sarah was barren. And so they, after some time of waiting, figured, well, Sarah came up with the idea that maybe it was going to be not through me because I'm barren. It doesn't make sense. They weren't thinking out of the box. They weren't thinking beyond the ordinary. They weren't thinking that God was able to do exceedingly abundantly above all we can ask or even think. They weren't thinking that. And so they thought, well, maybe it's going to be through Hagar, my maidservant, which in that time, that was a customary thing. Although God didn't approve of it, nevertheless, it was a customary thing. And so instead of waiting on the Lord, impatience got in the way, and whoa, what a mess was made. Still to this day, you have the Arabs that are a wild group of people, and if you're Arab, I love you. But by and large, they're a very wild group of people against a lot of people, especially against who? The Jews. And this hostility started way back between Ishmael and Abraham's only son, as God recognized him, the son of promise, Isaac. So impatience got in the way. You know, a lot of people get impatient with the pace of change. You know, God was changing their lives in so many different ways. He had moved them from what was comfortable and known and ordinary to the unknown. And when you're a sojourner, as they were, never really settling up until time later, sometimes that whole process of change can get tiring. I wonder how many of you are in a transitional state right now. You're in a process of change. And initially you started to say, well, I'm waiting on the Lord. I'm going to wait on you, Lord. But it's getting harder. It's getting more challenging. You've been in the wait tank. And you're ready for whatever it is to happen. You know, you got to be very, very careful. You know, because it's been said, impatience can cause wise people to do very foolish things. And Abraham, no doubt, was a lover of God. And Sarah. And they had wisdom because they followed, they obeyed. Whenever you obey, that's wise, and when God called them out, they obeyed. But they got desperate and they couldn't wait for God's timing. And so they did a foolish thing. You know, the Bible tells us this in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. You know, is there something that you are waiting to see happen and it hasn't happened yet? Is your patience wearing thin and you're feeling like taking action? Stop! Stop! Sit! Supplicate! Don't do it! Or you'll suffer. Seriously, you'll suffer. You know, or you may experience delay or damage. You can do other people damage. You damage yourself. And you'll have to deal with the consequences for years to come. So the best thing to do is to continue to wait on the Lord. You know, sadly for Abraham and Sarah, at that time in their life, they put their desires before waiting on the Lord to fulfill his desires through them and for them. And this introduced considerable heartache into their home, a lot of heartache into their home. We covered all of this, so I don't feel the necessity to continue to cover it again. But the good thing is that the story didn't end in heartache. You know, the beauty of the story is that they realized their error and continued to trust the Lord, and the Lord helped them to grow from this experience and move on in God's plan. That's one of the beautiful things when, if we make mistakes like they did, what I love about the Lord is that he's merciful. And that when we come to that realization, man, I jumped out. I went ahead of the Lord. I was impatient. We say, God, I'm sorry. Now I have to deal with the consequences, but help me to grow through this and help me to be able to manage this in a way that's honoring to you. You know, it didn't mean that there wasn't consequences as far as Abraham and Sarah was concerned. They had to deal with those consequences. But nevertheless, Abraham and Sarah continued to follow the Lord, and they did not live in their past sins and failures. It also has been said, your mistakes do not define you. Isn't that good? Your mistakes do not define you. You know, Psalm 37, verses 23 and 24 tell us this. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not utterly be cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. And we saw, as we studied the life of Abraham and Sarah, God really, in a sense, holding them with his hand, even through their failures. And you know, Saint, if you've made some blunders and you've come to the realization that, you know, my impatience got the best of me, I acted, but it's time to move forward in faith, God's holding you. He's going to keep you. He's protecting you. And you'll grow from this. Now, concerning Ishmael, he will forever be figurative of the result of human effort and the flesh. There will always be that picture. In my mind, I constructed an image of Ishmael. And next to him, I see those words, human effort and the flesh. It's sad. You know, sometimes some get marked. And Ishmael, unfortunately, was a product of the flesh. And Paul, he says this very clearly in Galatians chapter 4, verse 23, when he says, but he who was of the bondwoman, Hagar was the bondwoman, Ishmael was her son, was born according to the flesh, born according to human effort. This wasn't the plan that God had. Now, if you recall the description that the angel of the Lord gave to Hagar concerning Ishmael when he was still in her womb, you can easily see the parallel between Ishmael's temperament and the flesh. You could turn there. This is Genesis chapter 16, look at verse 11. And the angel of the Lord, this is really a Christophany. When you see the angel here in the New King James, it's capitalized because it's recognized that this is the pre-incarnate Christ that came. And the angel of the Lord said to her, that is Hagar, "Behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son. You should call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction." Now, she was on the run. She had gotten into quite a issue with her owner, Sarah, and she was on the run as a result of the harsh treatment she received. And yet the Lord reached out to her and ministered to her right where she was at. I love that about the Lord, that he can reach us right where we're at, and he does so often. Verse 12, though, in regards to his description, tells us this: he, that is Ishmael, will be a wild man. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. In the New Living Translation, verse 12 tells us this: this son of yours will be a wild man, as untamed as a wild donkey. He will rise or raise his fist against everyone, and everyone will be against him. Yes, he will live in open hostility against all his relatives. Isn't that interesting, the translation? And that is so descriptive of the nations and the people that came from Ishmael, and how they are very hostile towards, especially their half-brethren, so to speak, which is Israel. Jacob had 12 sons, and Jacob became Israel. God named him, renamed him. And it's interesting here, because this is a description of the flesh in three ways. At least three ways. Number one, those in the flesh cannot be tamed. We have prisons. We have counseling. We have therapy. We have, how many things do we have? And how many of these folks cannot be tamed? How many of you couldn't be tamed until Jesus came and said, "You are mine. That is not acceptable. I will change you because I love you too much to leave you the way that you are." Maybe he didn't say it like that, but he did that work in you. But those in the flesh cannot be tamed, number one. Number two, those in the flesh are against everyone. And number three, those in the flesh persecute those that are in the spirit. You know, let's think about this. Those in the flesh cannot be tamed. James, in James chapter 3, verse 8, he says this: "No man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison." Now let me ask you, do you think he's talking about this? He's talking about something much deeper. Jesus, he said this in Luke's Gospel chapter 6, verse 45, "A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good, and an evil man," who Ishmael would be considered, "an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil, for out of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaks." The Bible tells us this, that the heart is deceitful above all things. Who could know it? Only God knows it. The human heart cannot be tamed. That's why you cannot rehabilitate your flesh. Have you been able to? Come on, have you been able to? You haven't been able to rehabilitate your flesh. You know how I know that? Because if we were to take your thoughts and we were to put them on the screen, I wish I had that power just for this moment. You laugh, because some of you would be like, "Oh no, wouldn't want anybody to see my thoughts, wouldn't want anybody to see my heart." Because today, There were some things in there that wouldn't be pleasing. But you have the Spirit of God dwelling inside of you now. And because you have the Spirit of God dwelling inside of you, you have the power. God has given you everything that you need to exercise self-control. But before I came to know Christ, I did not have self-control. And so the tongue, the person, the heart is an unruly thing. That's the flesh. You cannot manage it, control it. Sometimes we see and we hear these stories of a person who gets put into bars. You put them in bars, you restrict. That's what we do. We try to restrict those that are more obvious. You let them out, and they go right back to rape, to murder. Some people learn, but they do other things. They say, well, I'm not going to get into crime, but they're drunks, they're drug addicts, or they're abusers of people. They just don't do things that are illegal as far as the world is concerned, but they're not right before God. And you can't tell me, no matter how good a moral or how good or moral a person is, apart from the Holy Spirit, you cannot convince me that you are all that good. Because everybody has their skeletons. And isn't it interesting sometimes when one of those skeletons get exposed from somebody we look up to and we think, oh my goodness, you? So those that are in the flesh cannot be tamed. Those that are in the flesh are against everyone. You know why? Because when push comes to shove, the flesh is self-centered. So I might be nice as long as everything is going my way. Matter of fact, that's how I am by nature. But then when things don't go my way, oh, watch out. I'll get you, sucker. One way or the other. Because we all have that flesh. And we know some of us act out on it. Others just think it. And we're too afraid to suffer the consequences. But if we could and get away with it, oh, we'd do it too. Yeah. Others just, they seared their conscience enough. And they just are narcissistic enough to think that they can get away with it. But eventually, it catches up with them. You know, Peter, he said this, especially those who walk according to the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise authority, they are presumptuous, self-willed. Then there's those that are in the flesh. They persecute those that are in the spirit. It's always been that way. Abel, Cain. Cain persecuted Abel. And then you have Ishmael and Isaac. Ishmael mocked Isaac. And it was something that was more than just your average joking around at someone else's expense. It was so alarming that it caused a very big concern for Sarah. And she said, we got to get them out of here before something happens here. And then we're going to see Esau. We're going to be introduced to the sons of Jacob. But the sons of Isaac, Esau and Jacob. And we're going to be getting there in just a moment. But as far as those that are in the flesh persecuting those that are in the spirit, Paul tells us this in Galatians chapter 4. Look at verse 28. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are children of promise. Isn't that good news? We are children of promise because of faith in Jesus. But as he who was born according to the flesh, Ishmael, then persecuted him who was born according to the spirit, that is, Isaac, even so it is now. Now, we move on to some better things in the genealogy of Isaac. Ishmael, somewhat of a dark thing, although it does, looking at his life, reveal to us what the flesh is like, and it reminds us of how dark the flesh is. And there's other things too. I mean, God was faithful to his promise to Hagar and made him a mighty nation, but and that just shows us how good God is, even to people that really don't honor him the way that they should. But nevertheless, for us, we just get a little vignette of his character and how it represents the flesh. Now, concerning Isaac, we look to verse 19. This is the genealogy of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Syrian. Now, Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But the children struggled together within her, and she said, "If all is well, why am I like this?" And so she went to inquire of the Lord, wisdom. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger." So now we look at this couple, Isaac and Rebekah. I love couples. I'm sure there's couples that have ministered to you. I have several couples throughout my life that I looked at, and they love the Lord. They weren't perfect people, but they generally demonstrated Christ-like character, and I can appreciate that. And even when they failed, I can learn, and I've learned, and I saw their repentance. I saw how they would correct those failures, and I looked at those couples, and I would say, you know what? I want to follow that good pattern. And I'm going back my early years. You know, most of you know that I'm 46 years old. I tell you my age all the time. I tell you my birthday, my date, and the things that I want. You can go online. I got a wish list. No, that part's not true. But you know that I'm 46. And perhaps most of you know that I was married at a very young age. I was married at 20. And my beautiful wife, Nina, she was 18. Now, you could do the math, but I'm not going to tell you how old she is. But anyway, the thing is that there were model couples as we were young, a young couple growing up in the Lord and looking at other couples and gleaning from them. And I love to see that Christian couples, even though they love the Lord and Isaac followed the footsteps of his father in regards to faith, unlike Ishmael, and so did Rebekah, she followed. These people were devoted to God, but that did not exclude them from difficulties. And I love that. I grew to love the fact that I could see godly people, godly couples that were further along than I was. They were devoted to God, but they had their difficulties. But the way that they handled them, you know, even sometimes after the facts, after a failure, still was the right thing. Sometimes they would come and say, "Hey, Dave, you know, the way that I handled that or the way that it wasn't right, and I'm sorry for being a bad example." I mean, that's all good stuff, rich, rich. And so we're going to look at this couple here, and they had their difficulties. And let me tell you, real quick, let me insert this. For all of us that have had those crazy thoughts to think that when I'm in this position, I won't be like that, be careful. Be careful with that. Be careful. You might find yourself doing worse Or at least, you know, you'll say, well, when that thought comes after you get a little bit of experience or a little bit of challenges, you might say, well, perish that thought. You know, let me not be so critical, because now that I'm in this spot, I'm thinking about doing the things that I said I would never do. But, you know, one thing is awesome, and this is what we see, is that what we're going to see, out of difficulties grow miracles. And I love that. I mean, here we're going to see three things that I'd like to point out concerning Isaac and Rebekah. Number one, they were a problem couple. And what I mean by that is that they weren't, you know, generators of problems. I mean, they did. We're going to see that. But they had some problems. They had problems. Let me ask you, how many of you, raise your hand, you have no problems? Oh, good. And God is using you? Raise your hand. How many of you God is using? Well, look at the hands going up. And you have problems? Good, because I feel that I can relate with you. And these folks, although they were godly, they had problems. You know, Isaac was burdened because Rebekah was barren. You know, the text tells us that Isaac was 40 when he took Rebekah as his wife, and that he was 60 when the twins were born. Think about it. 20 years. You know, when you're 40, you figure, hey, my clock's slowing down. You know, I better get started here. I've been waiting 40 years. Let's get started. They didn't have birth control. Hey, let's just be forward here. So what was going on for 20 years? They were wanting to have a baby. And month after month, whenever that desire came, and I'm sure it came, let's just say they do the, you know, the 3-year thing. Let's be married 3 years before we start a family, honey. Most people don't make it that long. But let's just say, that's still what, 17 years? Month after month. Month after month. Month. Man, that could be very discouraging. You know, there's so many women that I've known in times past where they got pregnant and they had a miscarriage. And then they try to get pregnant again, and it took a long time. And every month it would be very depressing and discouraging. And then they had a baby, and they were so happy and blessed. But I couldn't imagine 17 years of wanting. So, you know, he was burdened. He was burdened. And who knows what their conversations were like? Who knows her ups and downs? Who knows the times that she just bawled and said, "What's wrong with you? Why can't you get me pregnant?" Maybe he said, "Well, maybe it's not me, maybe it's you." And they had their fights. Who knows all the things they went through? We don't think about that oftentimes, but 20 years is a long time. So he was burdened and she was barren. But they did the wisest thing that they can do in their difficulties. They were a praying couple. They prayed. They prayed. You know, the scriptures tell us that Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife, and the Lord answered his prayer. He pleaded, and he waited, and he pleaded. She was barren, and out of this difficulty came a miracle. And the Lord heard his prayer, and she was pregnant. But shortly thereafter, there began this conflict within her womb. These two boys, they must have been boxers or something, because right early on in their life, they're just, you know, duking it out right in her womb, and she's feeling kicked in one side, and, you know, an elbow in one of her ribs. And, well, the story doesn't tell us all that, but, you know, the point is that there was trouble inside of her, And she knew this is something's going on here beyond the ordinary. And what's going on? And she sought the Lord. She inquired of the Lord, and the Lord, he told her exactly what was going to happen. And the temperaments, so to speak, of her kids, or at least she was going to realize that there were going to be conflict with each other, and that the younger was going to be over the older. I mean, think about that scenario. That causes conflict, just the thought of that. And thinking of these things, and then her knowing these things. But she prayed. She prayed. They were a praying couple. And you know, one of the wonderful things about God, Psalm 46:1 tells us this: God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. And both of these, Isaac and Sarah, had their times of trouble, and they went and sought the Lord, and the Lord was there to help them. Hey, and that might be a fitting word for some of you. Some of you might be facing some trouble. You're in a situation that you know something's not right. Something's going on. I'm not sure what it is. Seek the Lord. Seek the Lord. He's waiting to help you, but you must seek him with your whole heart. Then in verse 24, it tells us, so when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over. Thank God it was a guy and not a girl. So they called his name Esau, or red, or hairy. Maybe he was the first hairy of the Bible. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob, which is understood as heel catcher or supplanter. You know, heel catcher, he's coming out, but he's grabbing his heel like, I'm going to push ahead of you. I mean, right out of the womb. They were named so appropriately. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. So the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man, dwelling in tents, and Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. You know, some years had gone by, and these guys didn't just come out of the womb and start hunting. You know, Esau didn't just come out. This is now we understand. Some years later, they've been in the same home, growing up together. One's a man's man. The other one's a mama's boy. And then there is favoritism. Isaac, he loves Esau. He loves the rough one. The hunter, because the man brought home some food. You know, what man doesn't love a son who brings home some beef. And he was like, meef first, feed me, boy. And then Rebecca, she loved Jacob because, you know, she understood that Jacob was going to be the one that would, somehow she understood, she got it. Jacob would be the one that would excel in the family, as far as God was concerned. So, number one, we see that they were a problem couple. We see that they were a praying couple. And number three, that's two, that is, that they were a praying couple. And number three, they were a partial couple. You know, Isaac loves Esau, because he was a hunter, brought him some food. Rebecca loved Jacob because he was a homeboy. And it's interesting because I was reading on the internet, and you know everything on the internet is true. And I was reading on the internet, this caught my eye, 5 signs you have a favorite child. Let's see if any of you have a favorite child. Your younger child gets away with a lot more than your older child, who can become resentful. This is common and often related to favoritism of younger children. That's number one. Number two, you find yourself more relaxed around a favored child. You smile more. You laugh more. Ha ha. And are less stressed out. I like you around, son. You make me feel good. Number three, your tone and choice of words changes when discussing your children with outsiders, including friends, teachers, and others. He is so sweet. He's so cute. It's just, I love him. I mean, even from right out of the womb, it's just his eyes. We look. It's just, I love him so much. Shut up to the other one. Sit down. Whack. It says all this just like that, right in the article. No, I'm only kidding. You have uneven expectations for your children. You, my son, have the potential to be a doctor, a lawyer. You, a shepherd, a garbage man. If you're a garbage man, it's nothing. Please don't take it personal. It's you. Number four, you have uneven expectations for your children. Paradoxically, lower expectations are often a sign of favoritism, while unfavored children are frequently held to a higher standard on chores, behavior, and even academic performance. And then last, you get very defensive and uncomfortable when the topic of favoritism comes up, probably as a way to hide the guilt. So when one of the other kids say, "You love more than me." "No, I don't." "Don't even say that. Go do your chores." Another article said this: unfavored children, here are the consequences, have consistently been shown to exhibit high levels of depression and aggressive behaviors and a reduced sense of self-worth and social responsibility. So you, parents, especially if you have young kids, but any kids in the home, you got to be very careful. Because your favoritism will affect your children, whether you realize it or not. But favored children are usually quite as well aware of parents' preferences as less favored children, and they are not immune to the harmful effects. And think about this. Isaac and Rebecca, they had their favorites. And so these kids grew up in that environment where dad loved the rough one and mom loved the gentle one. And there's nothing wrong with Jacob, because Jacob was a tough guy too, as you'll see as we continue in his life story, and a man that really loved God. But nevertheless, they were in this environment that was not good for them. And yet this was a godly family. And I'm glad that this stuff is in the Bible. You know, I don't know about you, but I can relate to some dysfunctional family. I'm glad that some of God's chosen people, Isaac, he was one of the patriarchs, was somewhat dysfunctional. That blesses me that God can even work in spite of. Aren't you glad God works in spite of sometimes? All right, we're going to move on quickly now. I see the signs. Wake up. Published in September 2004, issue of Journal of Child Development, a review found that on average, parental favoritism had negative effects on all children, not just unfavored siblings. Now, let's move on to the boys. These boys, they started out struggling together, grew up in a home where favoritism was present, or prevalent, that is, and this was a recipe for sibling rivalry that only got worse as the boys got older. Now, it's interesting, and it's kind of funny, because in this narrative, Jacob, now they're older, and Jacob is a master chef with a cutthroat kitchen, as we're going to see. And he's cooking up a plan to use Esau's situation to his advantage. Thus, we see his name Jacob, or heel catcher, describe his sneaky behavior. Look at verse 29. Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, "Please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary." Therefore his name was called Edom. But Jacob called, which Edom would be a nickname, or rather Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright as of this day." And Esau said, "Look, I'm about to die, so what is this birthright to me?" Two things. One, we see that Jacob is kind of trying to make God's will happen. He's trying to take things into his own hands, and he didn't have to do that. Whenever God has a plan for any of us, we never have to take matters into our own hands. The best thing to always do is to wait on the Lord. When we take matters into our own hands, we just cause problems. He did. He took matters into his own hands. He caused problems. The second thing we see is that Esau, he had no regard for the birthright. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a few. Then Jacob said, "Swear to me of this day." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank, arose and went his way. But listen to how the end of the chapter goes. Thus Esau despised his birthright. An emphasis here on birthright. I got this from gotquestions.org. And the question is this: why is the birthright so emphasized in the Bible? And the answer is the birthright is emphasized in the Bible because it honored the right of the privileges of the family's firstborn son. This is something that's not cultural to us. It's something that's foreign to us by and large. After the father died or in the father's absence, the firstborn son assumed the father's authority and responsibilities. In addition to assuming the leadership role in the family, the recipient of the birthright inherited twice that received by the other sons. The birthright of a king's firstborn son included his succession to the throne. Now, this is what generally took place. On occasion, things didn't quite follow this, as you'll read through the Bible, and you'll see some outstanding things, but generally this is how the birthright order went. Now, Christians are warned to not imitate Esau, who, on impulse, gave away his birthright for a bowl of stew. Because of his foolishness, Esau, he lost his birthright and the blessings of his father. And we will be reading that on another day. And so in closing, the lesson for us is to respect what is holy. That is the lesson for us. This is something that Esau did not do. The things of God, the things of eternal life, he disesteemed them, and he cared more about his own life and the things of this world. And as a result of it, he will forever, ever be known as one who disesteemed those things that are holy. And as Christians, we are to respect what is holy. We should never throw away what is important, godly, or honorable for the sake of temporal pleasure. No matter what. And so, we learn a lot from characters, don't we? I love biblical characters. I look and I see things to follow, and I look and I see things and I learn things to not do. And I would be a fool to not purpose in my heart to put into practice the right things that we learn from these characters, these godly men and women that went before us, even though they weren't perfect. I would be a fool to not learn from them. And I would be equally a fool to repeat the wrongs of those characters that we were to look at and say, don't do that. Don't live that way. Don't follow that example. I wonder how many of you are going through something where you're at a crossroads or you are at a fork in the road. You have a choice. You have a choice. Maybe God has given you some direction way back And you've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and it's not quite all coming together. And you're thinking, you're entertaining the thought of going down the path that you think is going to get the job done. Stop! Pray. Pray. Because remember, those who wait on the Lord will renew their strength. Maybe you're getting tired because you're not waiting on the Lord.